we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is CFRO 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio, Vancouver, Canada. Today is Friday, February 23rd, 2018. For the next hour, I'm your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio today by our host, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
And our guest, Scott McDonald, who is an author, editor, and science enthusiast. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you.
This is your third time here.
Yeah, I don't know why you guys keep inviting me back, but I like it when people are forced to listen to me talk.
Our show today is all about plastics and their impact on the environment and wildlife. We'll offer tips on what you can do in your daily life to reduce your plastic use and speak with Joshua Bruce David, co-founder of my favorite natural deodorant companies, which is appropriately named the best deodorant in the world. I met the family who founded this company when I was doing animal rights outreach for the captive prisoners at the Vancouver Aquarium about a year ago. They'd mistakenly thought the aquarium was a sanctuary for rescued animals, and they had asked for their money back after feeling deceived. So ever since then, we have been good friends and stayed in touch on the issues of animal rights activism. So stay tuned for that interview in about 15 minutes. And Allison, you want to talk about your weekend on the island?
Yes, I just got back. By the way, for whoever is out there right now in Vancouver, good luck to you. I barely made it here.
No, my bus was going so slow, I got off and walked.
Oh, so the walking was faster.
And then I got to go up to all the people in the Canada Goose jackets and show them photos of coyote pups on my phone and make them feel badly.
So it was all well worth it.
It was worth it. We had some good conversations.
Oh, right. So making the best out of a bad situation. That's great. So, yeah, I was just on the island for a week, and it was pretty snowy there, but now we have a snowstorm currently in Vancouver, so we've got more of that here to deal with, and this will probably be the only time I go out because I had to be here for the radio show because I'm dedicated. So, but wow, is that ever
you
scary? Wow, is that ever scary driving? Okay, so this is how I spent my time on North Vancouver Island last week. You know, there's not a lot to do there, and actually, Jen, you're friends with someone named Rima on Facebook.
Just Facebook friends. I've never met her, right?
Yeah, like many of our friends, right? Mm-hmm. And I discovered her because she had left a comment on a post on your Facebook page saying that she wanted to go vegan, but it was hard for her because she lives in a small town. And you said, what small town? And she said, Port Hardy. And you said, hey, Allison, isn't that where you came from or you're from, where mm-hmm. I was born and raised? And I lived there for 17, 18 years. And yeah, and as it turned out, I said, well, Rima, I'm actually going to be in Port Hardy coming up soon. Why don't I? Because she said her difficulty was like she doesn't cook. And I said, well, why don't I bring you some cookbooks and I can help you and guide you through veganism, right? Because I certainly didn't have anything else to do there. It's just for, might as well do some activism, right? While you're on vacation and
you're
don't have
so
any
generous.
Friends.
You are always buying people cookbooks.
I know. I love buying cookbooks. I see good cookbooks at thrift stores all the time, so I'm always collecting them. And not just cookbooks, but other books about animal ethics and that. So, yeah, any books, actually, that I see that I think that people might like. So, I brought her some books. And actually, my sister is traveling with me now, too. And she was so sweet. She brought her a whole bunch of vegan treats as well. And it was just her birthday. So we went to meet her. And we sat and chatted with her. And it was really inspiring, I think, to meet someone in such a small community where veganism really doesn't exist and there's no support, and to find someone. I said to her, for her first, like, what is your motivation for going vegan? Because I wanted to kind of know where to lead the conversation. And she said, well, the animals. And I said, okay, so you're basically, you know, it seemed like she was sort of, you know, born vegan. As I say, we're born with compassion, right? And it was just really wonderful to meet with her and to have conversations with her. This seemed to be the first time she was ever exposed to vegan issues. So I think a lot of the things that I was chatting to her about were new. We were talking about food, and I was telling her about the options at the local grocery store. There's only one store there, Save on Foods, but lots of stuff there. And I think it was just a really positive experience. minds to be able to reach out to that. And I think what I can take away from this and to convey to our listeners is that, you know, if you live in a small town, start a group because there's a lack of community. Right. And that's what her challenge is that she said, I don't know any other vegans. Mm-hmm. And I just think that, like, I've always thought if I ever moved back there, like, I would be all over that scene. Like, there would be a vegan scene because of me. But you can't wait for someone else to do it. You have to step up to do it. Right. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a small town as well, people are really amenable to learning things because also there's not a lot going on in small towns. They want to participate in activities and it's like they have the time because life is slower there. So,
right. And can I just say something else? For people that say there aren't a lot of vegan options in my town, that is such a lie. There are chickpeas and beans on every shelf in stores. You don't have to find these gardening products.
What about fruits and vegetables?
Yes, fruits and vegetables.
They're vegan.
Beans and nuts.
Yeah.
People think that going vegan means that you have to be able to find all those specialty products that you find in places like Whole Foods. Scotty, you want to say something?
I just recently learned, and I should have known this a long time ago. Sorry. I just recently learned that fresh vegetables are terrible for you. You should buy frozen vegetables because fresh vegetables in the grocery store are picked early and aged on the road.
Right.
Frozen vegetables picked right at the prime time, flash frozen, same with fruit, far more nutrients.
Yeah, I've read about that, heard about that as well. So this was a really busy day of veganizing for me because we spent the afternoon with Rima. And by the way, this is a shout out for Rima, a new friend in Port Hardy. We're going to keep in touch and she's going to come visit when she comes to Vancouver. And so thanks for that connection, Jen. That was amazing.
And Rima, thanks for being open to that if you're listening.
The wonders of Facebook.
I know.
And anyway, so I spent the evening trying to re-veganize my parents because I think they've forgotten.
You have to keep trying with parents. It's like the knocking over the pop machine.
And you know what? I will. So I showed them the documentary film What the Health that came out last year on Netflix. And I got them to sit through it. And it was like, you know, they're really hesitant about whatever education that I have to give to them. But they all know they should listen to it. Mm-hmm. At the end of that film, this film is about what just how our health industry works and how often the health industry is against us and how the health industry pushes actually really nutritious products and foods on society. And there's the pharmaceutical company and there's agriculture subsidies and, you know, doctors are being paid to give patients drugs instead of actually trying to prevent disease. And this just, and there's so many environmental hazards as well because of animal agriculture. I think this really opened their eyes a little bit more. My mom, at the end of the film, she said, everyone should watch this film. And I was really shocked at that. So I just wanted to talk about, I know you've seen this film, Jen, and I just wanted to chat a little bit about, like, there's so many messages in this film, but what would be your one takeaway from it?
Well, I think the main point of the film is really to show that the organizations that are supposed to be set up to protect us from diseases or who are supposed to be doing research to find cures for diseases are unwilling to acknowledge certain facts. And then it makes you think, well, are they just in it for the donation money? And I've stopped giving donation money to quite a few organizations because of these types of documentaries. And I'm also talking about Cowspiracy here, which was made by the same person, Kip Anderson.
Yeah, and Keegan Kuhn. So it showed Kip Anderson trying to phone the American Diabetes Association, the American Cancer Society, after he had seen on their website that they're widely promoting beef and egg and chicken recipes as promoting health. Mm-hmm. So eat this if you have diabetes, whereas there's studies that show, and that are peer-reviewed, of course, that show that, no, you shouldn't be eating those kinds of foods if you have these diseases. And they wouldn't give him any answers because, you know, it's unfortunate, but it's showing that these types of organizations are secretive. They actually didn't want to talk. And there was the one scene there where that CEO of, I think it was the American Diabetes Association, he just said, I'm not getting into an argument.
That was the funniest
I'm not getting
part
into
of
an
the
argument.
Film. Oh my
it's,
God.
It was
so funny.
Jen, you and I do interviews all the time. Has anyone ever said that when we've asked a question that maybe it's just a question? We're interviewers, we're journalists,
he
we're trying to
the
get
public an answer.
Yeah,
on that.
And
he's getting public
funding.
Yeah,
and he's the CEO. CEO, and he doesn't want to get into an argument about it. So anyways, and he just wouldn't talk about it, and he left the room. And yeah, Scotty.
Most people don't realize that there's a difference between debate and argument.
Yeah.
People that cannot debate don't really have a, what's the word, logical leg to stand on.
Yeah, it's, right.
And
yeah.
It wasn't even a debate because Kip was just asking him for info. It was just an interview. It was not a debate. So anyways, those are my thoughts. What the health? Check it out to see what you think.
It's
what,
on Netflix.
What you can get from it. I just think that everyone can take something from this film.
It's great. Yeah.
Radio Vancouver. Local and not so local music. A music show that tells you where and when you can see and hear live music. With band dates, live musical guests, and a few surprises too. Radio Vancouver. Wednesdays, 3:30 to 5. It doesn't just play music and go home. It's out there, absorbing it. Experience Vancouver on Facebook at facebook.com/Vancouver. Radio Vancouver, Wednesdays, 3:30 to 5 p.m. on Co-op Radio. It's fun!
And we have some events coming up. Thursday, March the 1st, from 6 to 8:30 p.m., attend an event called Understanding Anxiety and Strategies to Support Children at the Justice Institute Auditorium in New Westminster. Tickets are on Eventbrite or Facebook under the name Understanding Anxiety and Strategies to Support Children. We have a few animal rights activist kids in our community, and many of them are the only vegans in their classes and social groups. So I think this would be an excellent event to help kids who are very much aware of the state of the world today and feeling a little anxious about their futures. The keynote speaker is Dr. Kristen Burr, director at the North Shore Stress and Anxiety Clinic and consultant for Anxiety BC. And a public health nurse will be available at this time to talk to parents and share school health resources. Dr. Burr will talk about recognizing anxiety and anxiety issues in children and youth. She'll have strategies and tips for supporting a child struggling with anxiety, as well as other helpful resources. On Saturday, March 17th, from 2 to 5 p.m., We Animals, 15 years of photojournalism and animal advocacy with Joanne MacArthur. Joanne MacArthur is a Canadian photojournalist. We've had her on the show a couple of times. I definitely encourage you to check out her website, weanimals.org. Her photos are taken in slaughterhouse settings. She travels around the world. She goes into circuses and zoos. She takes photos of the animals who are languishing in captivity. So this event will take place at 800 Robson Street. And again, that's Saturday, March 17th from 2 to 5. All this information will be on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. And upcoming in June 28th, but you might want to get your tickets now, Animal Rights National Conference. It goes from June 28th to July 1st. It's a four-day event. Since 1981, the Animal Rights National Conference has brought together a diverse group of people bonded in their commitment to animal rights, social change, and sustainable living. With more than 175 speakers on 80-plus panels representing more than 100 vegan companies and organizations, this is the place to be whether you're new to the scene or looking to supersize your activism. And Allison and I actually attended this last year in Virginia, and it was incredible. I met so many people that are celebrities in the animal rights field, including my absolute favorite celebrity, Sean Monson, who created the documentary Earthlings. You can find that film on Vimeo. Watch it for free.
Yeah, and
this
attending,
is the vegan maker.
Attending this this conference gives you the chance to meet all these people that inspire you so much and to meet new people who are coming into the movement as well.
And speaking of Joanne MacArthur, who I just mentioned, she was speaking at the conference. And she had a photo of, I think it was a chimpanzee who had passed away, who'd spent his life in a lab, and they buried him with the key for his cage in his hand, because apparently when he was in his cage, he would always try to reach for the keys that were attached to their keeper's belt. Isn't that just so sad? That photo just shook me up. Do you remember that? Were you there?
Yeah, that's the photo, I think, on the cover of her We Animals book.
Oh my
God. She told that story, and I'm sure she'll be telling that story again at this presentation. The presentation on March 17th, I think, not to be missed. If you haven't seen it before, go and attend, because Joanne's from Toronto, so she doesn't get out here very much.
Yeah, she's awesome. So if you have an animal-friendly event that you'd like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it to our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. And now for some news. California food company Don Lee Farms debuted its organic plant-based raw burgers last week at Costco. The burger patty is made from a blend of beans, seeds, and beet juice. Don Lee Farms enters a space currently dominated by two innovative bleeding meat patties, the Impossible Burger and the Beyond Burger, both of which have found widespread success in retail and restaurant outlets. So a few days ago, Allison, I was out at downtown Robson Square doing some TV outreach for animals with former undercover investigator with Mercy for Animals, Jeff Regeer, and a couple of friends. And we went to the grand opening of the new vegan restaurant in Yale Town called Meat. It's a play on words. It's M-E-E-T. Definitely check it out. This is their third restaurant they've opened, and they are now featuring the Beyond Burger. So it's known as the Bleeding Burger. It's got the beets in it, and it's got flakes of coconut that make it sizzle on the grill. And everybody at the table was saying, if I was a meat eater and someone gave me this, I would have no idea it was vegan. So I'm really appreciative of these vegan meats to try to veganize the world. It was delicious. In other news, a new Toronto-based investor coalition, Dow Foods International, formed this week with the mission to fulfill the rising demand for meat in China with plant-based and clean meat, which is made from animal cells in a lab, to reduce the consumer demand for animal products, which are not only cruel but harmful to our planet and our health. So again, I'm glad to be seeing this fake meat industry kind of growing. The slaughter of people defending their land or environment continued unabated in the past year, with new research showing almost four people a week were killed worldwide in struggles against mines, plantations, poachers, and infrastructure projects. The toll of 197 in 2017, which has risen fourfold since it was first compiled in 2002, underscores the violence on the frontiers of a global economy driven by expansion and consumption. Ben Leather, senior campaigner for Global Witness, said the situation remains critical until communities are genuinely included in decisions around the use of their land and natural resources. Those who speak out will continue to face harassment, imprisonment, and the threat of murder. But there was a glimmer of hope that after four consecutive increases, the number of deaths has flattened off amid growing global awareness of the crisis of the renewed push for multinational companies to take more responsibility and for the governments to tackle impunity. Most of the killings occurred in remote forest areas of developing countries in Latin America, where the abundance of resources is often in inverse proportion to the authority of the law or environmental regulation. Extractive industries were one of the deadliest drivers of violence, according to the figures, which were shared exclusively with The Guardian in an ongoing collaboration with Global News Witness to name every victim. The U.S. military wants to enlist fish and other sea life to help it tracks enemy submarines at sea. The Persistent Aquatic Living Sensors program could also modify existing species to make them better underwater spies, an effort that would face stiff opposition from environmental and animal rights groups. The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, the Pentagon's Blue Sky Research and Development Wing, announced the program earlier this month, which aims to study natural and modified organisms to determine which ones could best support sensor systems that detect the movement of manned and unmanned underwater vehicles. So for the past few months, I've been using a new product called the best deodorant in the world, and I can't say enough about it. I've tried all the natural products out there. I've made my own from coconut oil, baking soda, and essential oils, and nothing has worked. So I finally found one that's amazing, and I really, you guys have to try this. So it's got plastic-free packaging, which is sort of the theme of our show today. We're focusing on plastics. It's made of cardboard, really nice little package. And so on the phone now from the East Coast of Canada, we have one of the co-founders of this company, Joshua Bruce David. Welcome, Joshua.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for making time for us today.
I wouldn't miss it for the world.
So, tell our listeners about the inspiration for your product. You have a really neat story about how this came to fruition.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's been an interesting journey for sure. We started the company in 2009 just due to a personal health problem, and we couldn't find a natural deodorant that worked. We couldn't find one that was safe, so we kind of turned our kitchen into a natural deodorant laboratory, created what I consider to be a very mediocre deodorant, but it became really popular. It ended up at the Golden Globes and MTV Music Awards and became a successful little brand, and it was really fun. But in 2016, things became very real for us. I had a health scare that I almost didn't come home from, which made us open our eyes to what we really wanted to do with our life. And we started thinking, and we thought a lot, and then we became obsessed with this mission to change the world. So in 2016, we shut down our company, which was very scary, shutting off your income and eliminating some jobs for a time. But it was very important because during that time, we really wanted to make a change of what people thought of natural deodorant and kind of deodorant as a whole, and looked at the industry and said, we want to shake it up and we want to change everything to be the way it should have been from the get-go. So we turned it into all of our packaging had to come from recycled paper. It had to be biodegradable, only use plant-based inks. I know a lot of companies out there are cruelty-free and vegan, and I think that's wonderful that they are. One of the things that we wanted to do was take that a step further and go through our entire supply chain and make sure our suppliers were going through that process as well, so we could really feel comfortable and sleep at night knowing that we're not testing on animals, but neither is anyone in our entire supply chain. So that was really important for us when it came to that.
Can I just let our listeners know what that means a bit, Joshua? So a lot of people, they'll buy a vegan product, they think it's vegan, but there's actually an ingredient in there that is tested on animals, right?
Well, this is the thing, right? Like, that certification is very wishy-washy.
Yeah, exactly.
If you literally fill out an application that says, we don't test on animals, that's pretty much it.
Right.
Which is wonderful if you don't test on animals, but the thing is, with most cosmetics or personal care products, there are many, many, many ingredients in there. And many of these ingredients are tested on animals.
Yeah.
So it's very important to, you know, dig through your supply chain, find out who they are, where is the product coming from, where is the ingredient coming from. It's not easy.
Yeah.
It takes a ton of time, but you only have to do it once.
And then that's your product, exactly.
Be better.
Joshua, are you aware of, because I've always wondered, like, why does a deodorant need to be tested on animals? Are you aware of the process that these animals are undergone through with tests? Like, why does a deodorant or ingredients in a deodorant actually need to be tested on animals, and how do they do that? Is it through skin testing?
So, depending on the deodorant and depending on the ingredient, certain ingredients are tested. And now, mind you, many ingredients in a lot of conventional deodorants and even some lower-end, quote-unquote, natural deodorants that aren't very natural, there a lot of ingredients are in a lot of different personal care products, not just the deodorant itself. But yeah, a lot of those types of ingredients are tested on animals, whether it's on a skin test or an eye test or whatever it is, just to see how much they're going to irritate somebody, right? Because that's when you're putting deodorant on, we have to always remember it's one of the most sensitive areas of our body, our armpits. And if huge brand deodorant companies are irritating people constantly, then that's not good for business. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things that they have to test these ingredients. And, you know, it's sad that animals end up in those positions.
Yeah. We've done a show on that, animal testing labs. It's really sad. So, tell us, what makes your deodorant different? Sell us on the product. I'm already sold on it, but tell our listeners why everybody else is loving it, too.
Well, it's funny. When we did this, it was literally just saying, okay, well, when you look at natural deodorant, every single person seems to make it in their kitchen based on some recipe they found on the internet, and everyone just makes a variation of that recipe, like we did for years.
Me too.
And then we all make little tweaks to it based on something we read about, oh, well, charcoal's supposed to be good or magnesium's supposed to be good. Let me add some of that, or, you know, maybe some mango butter. But there's no science behind any of this.
Yeah.
We actually enlisted the help of an actual scientist to take the ingredients that we approved and formulate it to work with us based on our genetic makeup and based on our chemistry, and now I know why no one else does it, because it's a very costly, labor-intensive process. It's not just the cost of making it, but we've had about 200,000 test pits during that process.
Wow.
So it literally costs a fortune to do it. And now I know why no one did it.
Mm, well, thank you.
Yeah, it's been an adventure. So that's one thing, is actually formulating based on science and keeping the ingredients very transparent, very real, very natural, and kosher. And the other side of that is the packaging. Like, people don't understand, like, plastic packaging, which is like 97% of all deodorant out there, is so toxic. It's leaching BPA and BPS and PVCs and phthalates into your product. And a lot of these products are hot poured, so it means it's going to leach even more into them. And then we're rubbing those on the most sensitive areas of our body. And that's what happened to me. I developed a baseball-sized lump in my upper chest that the doctors attributed to these things. And when I went in to have it removed, I had a botched surgery and almost died. So it was it was a very real moment.
Joshua, was that your motivation for starting a natural deodorant company? And I'm wondering, like, as a business owner and entrepreneur, I don't know if you've had other businesses or whatnot before, but what is the thought process that goes into saying, okay, I'm going to start a business, but a lot of businesses are really, they're really unethical, and they take a lot of resources from the earth and they hurt animals, obviously. What goes into starting a business where you say, okay, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to do this the right way. I'm going to source the ingredients as ethically as I can. I'm going to make recycled packaging. It seems like you've thought of everything, and that doesn't seem to be the norm for how one might start such a business. So maybe could you explain, like, how that thought process goes, just to give other people inspiration on if they want to start ethically run businesses, and that it all doesn't have to be harmful to the earth and animals?
That's an amazing question. Yes. So my wife and I, Margo, have been in business together for a while, probably close to 15 years. And this is our first real physical product company, and we did start it in 2009. But when we started it, there was no thought. We were certified with PETA as a cruelty-free vegan company since the day we started. But it was literally, again, filling out a piece of paper. But when we started the company, there was no thought behind anything. It was like, okay, well, let's get we used glass jars at the time. It's like, okay, well, let's get glass jars and let's print labels and let's make this product in our kitchen and sell it. That was the thought to it, and as long as we weren't hurting animals in that small sphere that we knew at the time, we were happy. But when we really opened our eyes to, wow, this industry is so flawed, along with so many others, it took us two years to, you know, ethically source our suppliers, to ethically, and that goes for ingredients, that goes for our paper, that goes for our ink. Virtually no company carries plant-based ink in stock to make anything you need to make. So everything's custom ordered. So it literally took us 2 years to source everything, vet all of our suppliers, and make sure everyone was on the same page that we were who we used, and then make it affordable at the same time.
It is affordable.
Not at all. If you want to go down this path, it is a serious commitment.
You know,
I'm really giving a shit.
I feel that you are actually, it's because of you, you're a pioneer, you're paving the way so that other entrepreneurs in the future won't have these hurdles and use it as an excuse that, oh, these ingredients don't exist, no one's done it before. You've now set the way for other people to make their own products with the research and the work that you've done already. Would you say that is sort of... I would see that as a role for you in the community and in society.
So thank you very much. And yes, so one of the things that we're doing as an organization that we committed ourselves to doing, in addition to standing up for animals, in addition to standing up for children, is advocating for other companies to make these changes and for us to help them with that, because we've already put 2 years into finding these suppliers and in making these changes and to be able to do it flawlessly and seamlessly. So we've created an advocacy group where we're going to start helping other companies do that, because it's not easy. And at the end of the day, I would love to look back and be like, hey, you know what? We helped 50 other companies do this, or whatever that number might be.
And you and your partner, Margo, are really passionate about environmentalism and community giving. So let's talk about what your plans are once you really get up and running.
So we lead with purpose. You know, after almost not making it home, it really made us realize what was important in life. And it was, you know, spending time with our family and literally doing something to change the world, not just pulling money out of it. So when we decided to recreate this company, the first thing we wanted to do was, number one, be an advocate for children and be an advocate for animals, because those are the two most important things in our life. So the two two really big things that we do is, one, every single deodorant purchased provides 1 year of clean water to a child in the developing world. And we're leading with that because over 4,000 kids die every single day because they don't have clean water. It's a very solvable problem. So that's what we're leading with, is to solve that one. Now, in addition to that, so a lot of companies, they don't give 0.1% away. We've committed as a minimum 5%, and I think we're about like 7 to 8% right now.
Wow.
Which is totally cool, because it's what makes you get out of bed. It's what drives me to do this. And another thing that we do is, we call it Impact Day, which is the first day of every month. We donate 100% of our total sales, not cost. We donate every penny that comes in that day to an animal advocacy group, whether it be Farm Sanctuary or Mercy for Animals, or we partner with someone the first day of every month to do that. So those are two big ones that we really commit ourselves to. And then literally pretty much anybody shows up that has something to do with kids and animals will participate at the biggest level we can possibly be involved with it. So
that's great. I'm so glad I met you. What a coincidence about how we met, just at the aquarium that day.
I know, right?
I don't know if you listened to the beginning of the show at this hour, but I was talking about that day that I was doing activism outside the aquarium, and you and your family came out pretty upset and feeling deceived because you thought that you'd done your research and that it was a sanctuary, and they do deceive the public. And I said to Margot, your wife, go ask for your money back. And she did. And they looked at her like she was crazy and said no. And she said,
well,
I feel
incredible.
Deceived.
What a great story.
And then so you came back to us and we stayed in touch on Facebook. And now I'm on your team for the best deodorant in the world. I'm so happy.
We are so blessed. And it's funny you say that, Jen, because for a long time, Margot and I always tried to like force hires and dig and dig and dig and try and find the right people. And we ended up hiring all the wrong people, and then when we just kind of let the universe help bring the right people to the team that belong in the team, so that's one of the other things that we made as a change was, nobody can be part of the team unless they're 100% committed to what we're committed to, because if they don't get it, like before they come here, they need to be committed to this stuff before they even come here, because they come here and they get it. It's not about deodorant. Yes, we created the best deodorant in the world and for the world, but it's not about that. That's our little vehicle to come out and enact a ton of change.
I love you. Thank you.
And I love you so much.
I wish just everyone, again, would find their niche of something. Say that if they're an entrepreneur like yourself, if they want to create something, they can have their niche in something. But you've already taken the best deodorant in the world, so that one's taken.
Find something
which
else.
Is great.
Make
but there's many other things out there. I want the best vegan shaving cream in the world, because that's something I find hard to find.
I just use soap.
Yeah, that doesn't cut it for me.
Okay. All right, princess. What I need right now is something to stop my hands from cracking, because I'm a massage therapist, and this weather, I look like an elephant right now, if you look at my hands.
You do look like an elephant.
Thanks.
It's appropriate for animal voices.
Yeah, nothing works. So that could be your next project.
I want to do something about the tusks, because those really give away your elephant niche.
Okay, so before we wrap up, we just got a couple minutes left here, Joshua. For those who are interested in the best deodorant in the world, and this is the name brand, tell them where they can find it.
So, yes. So, you can go to our new website, thebestdeodorant.org. You can go there. We are not taking any orders right now, but you can check out our site. You can see what we're all about. You can hear about our advocacy, our charities, what we're doing. And we're going to go live on March 11th. But right now, you can go there. You can check it out. We've got an incredible new video coming out on March 11th. I'll give you this as a hint. Me, bathing suit, front end loader.
Whoa.
I don't know what that means.
I'm intrigued. And the website is beautiful. Did you make that?
Yeah.
I wrote that down, thebestdeodorant.org. Hard to forget.
Or you can go to thebestdeodorantintheworld.com. They all go there. We have like 50 of them that all go there. But thebestdeodorantintheworld.com has been around for 9 years. But we switched to a .org because we lead with purpose. We give money away before one person in our company gets paid. We make sure money goes out to the charities we're part of before anybody gets paid in our company.
I love that. All businesses should follow that ethical model, I think. Thank you so much for being an inspiration for other business leaders out there.
Yes, and stop supporting those deodorant companies that keep animals caged up in labs. That is the most important thing here for me. I mean, if you want to put toxins in your body, fine, I don't care. I want those animals out of those labs. So thank you for this.
Totally. Thank you, guys. What you're doing is absolutely incredible, and I can't wait to help you get more of this message out as well.
You're awesome. Okay, we'll talk to you soon, Joshua. Thanks.
Love you guys. Thank
you. Love you too.
Okay,
bye.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
And now we have our guest, Scotty McDonald, science enthusiast, editor, author. Welcome.
Hello.
So what are we talking about today?
We are going to talk about the wonderful, exciting world of plastic, which ushered in this wonderful consumer culture and throwaway living. Mm-hmm. Plastic actually goes back as far as 1600 BCE. That's before Common Era. Mesoamerican cultures, they harvested rubber for years and years, and rubber is technically a plastic polymer, but it is organic. Now, they used rubber to make bands, figurines, balls for their really weird sports that usually ended with the other team dying. Inorganic plastics, which are byproducts of the petroleum industry, those first showed up in the 1800s with the Industrial Revolution, but things didn't really ramp up until post-World War I, when chemistry became more and more advanced. And as I said, ushered in the modern era of disposable everything. Now, if you're talking to people that are pro-plastic, they generally will assume the default position that plastic is better than paper because plastic doesn't involve deforestation. But this doesn't take into account that plastics, to completely degrade, usually around 450 years, depending what type of plastic you're using, it can take some bottles 1,000 years to biodegrade. Now, a paper, even paper thrown into a garbage dump, will start to dissolve because bacteria have been digesting cellulose since trees first popped up. They started learning how to digest cellulose. Bacteria don't really know what to do with plastic, and because we use so much of it, it is now crept into every corner of the globe. Most concerning to us should be the ocean. Without the ocean, we cannot live. Like the food chain and natural systems rely on the ocean. And if you wipe out one small fish, that has repercussions that echo through the entire ecosystem. And walk along any coastline anywhere in the world, and instead of finding, like, you know, driftwood washed up on beaches, you will find just giant chunks of plastic. A good example is the radioactive plastic debris that showed up on the west coast of the United States after the Fukushima earthquake. There was just tons and tons of plastic that just showed up. They are finding plastic inside the stomachs of fish, whales, birds. One of the worst ones, because it's so hard for us to get rid of, are the microbeads that are used for exfoliating scrubs, and they're just, you know, it's, I mean, they could technically use sand for that, and sand is at least natural.
Good point.
But sand is expensive. Plastic is almost free.
Mm.
Now, these tiny microbeads are getting into everything, and you can't go anywhere in the world and not find evidence of this plastic. And the problem is that it won't break down. It will just stay, and it will stockpile. And so the way the Gulf Streams work is there is I've always called it the dump pump, but I believe it's called a sort of a form of convection where hot water moves from the tropics along the surface to the northern hemisphere, and as it cools, it drops down and then travels along the bottom as cold water until it gets back to the tropics. That keeps the tropics somewhat cooler than they should be because of the cold water that the winds are taking and pushing to land. And it's the reason why Vancouver, unlike today, rarely gets snow, because we are in line with one of these gyres, which is where the water that has cooled then drops back down. Now, these form basically little whirlpools, like kind of like when you take the stopper out of the bathtub, there's a little whirlpool, and that's where the water is dropping down. You've all probably heard of Garbage Island. Mm-hmm. Vice did a great documentary on it, but it basically all the plastic that the fishing industry and international shipping and recreational boaters, everything they throw overboard, which is called flotsam or jetsam for jettison, flotsam, stuff that floats, it will naturally find its way to these currents. And now, technically, you couldn't actually live on Garbage Island because it's not solid. It's just mm-hmm. individual pieces of plastic that have been dragged there by the currents. Mm-hmm. But it's 5 years ago, it was the size of Texas. And again, this will not degrade. And as while plastic does take a long time to break down, what it also does is leach toxins into the environment, further poisoning our oceans. I think Garbage Island was found somewhere in the mid-80s, but no one really talked about it because, you know, the plastic industry and the oil companies don't really like to talk about, you know, the negative effects of their products. The amount of plastic manufactured in the first 10 years of this century eclipses the total produced in all of 1900 to 2000, because basically what happened, I'm sure there's other ways of manufacturing plastic, but the easiest way is using petroleum. And the oil industry, you know, because all companies like to reduce their waste and maximize their revenue streams. So when they realized they could make plastic out of what they were just throwing away, boom, they just created a giant environment. I actually have a theory that I can't prove, so we'll just call it a tinfoil hat theory. But most packaging until plastic became the norm was, you know, paper, various forms of paper packaging. And because food companies needed to use fuel to get their products to market, I suspect that the oil and gas industry approached a lot of the people that manufacture consumer food products and said, hey, we'll give you a break on your gas prices if you cover everything in plastic. Mm. I can't prove that, but I think it's true.
I think so.
Now, the problem that we're gonna keep running into, and you can, I mean, there's so many trickle down effects that happen. I mean, just 10 years ago, we started having, everyone was concerned about using regular plastic water bottles because toxic chemicals that can affect the endocrine system, that can destroy your hormones, leach into the water from being held in it. Mm-hmm. Plastics, because while everything is slowly breaking down, whether it's organic or inorganic, it's just that organic stuff takes longer to break down because bacteria haven't figured out how to take it apart yet. Mm-hmm. Now, so in part of this process, one of the things that plastic does is outgassing. And it releases stuff that could be incredibly toxic to us. We don't really do a lot of studies because, I don't know, I think the oil companies have a lot of money because they seem to bury things very easily. And that is, that should be concerning to us. But there are simple steps that we can all take to reduce our plastic use. One of the things I hate most right now is these K-cups.
Oh my God, don't get me started.
A, it costs you more money in the long run. B, it's just, they're just over packaging stuff. Mm-hmm. So they can, it, but that doesn't help the environmental impact that our lifestyles have. Even worse, although it doesn't involve, actually, no, I'm pretty sure the pads do involve some sort of polymers. Swiffer sweepers.
Okay.
Are the biggest ripoff in the world. Mm-hmm. Because I actually, when I was down in Oregon, I was trading manual labor around the house for room and board. Mm-hmm. So they didn't use mops. They used Swiffer sweepers. Mm-hmm. And to Swiffer sweeper a hardwood floor about 10 feet by 15 feet, mm-hmm. it took four of those things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And but basically, companies are just creating products that you have to continually buy more of.
Right.
You know what's more efficient? Using a freaking mop.
Mm-hmm. Mops. It's like people that buy paper towels. There's no need for paper towels.
No, use cloth.
And I've never bought saran wrap in my adult life either. There's Tupperware, right?
Well, Tupperware is made of plastic.
Well, yes, it is. But you could get glass. Like, it's yeah, you could just Tupperware.
You
what
could
is it called?
You could
I
just
glass.
You could just buy your spaghetti sauce in glass jars and then repurpose them.
Exactly.
It's all about. I mean, I don't want to sound like a hippie, though I do listen to a lot of Pink Floyd. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Because, I mean, I don't want to. I think I've said this nearly every time I've been here, but we only have one planet, and I don't know if anyone's aware of this. Outer space is incredibly inhospitable, and we can't survive there.
And I don't want to say this every time, but I'm not having children, even though it's my dream, because of the attitudes that I'm seeing in people. I know we can't turn it around. And let's go back to the plastics and coffee again. Something that a lot of people don't know, coffee cups, disposable paper coffee cups, are lined with BPA. That is leaching into your coffee and then into your body.
Yep.
Think
well,
about that.
I'm a cigarette smoker, so the health impacts aren't really there for me. I'm planning to be dead within 7 years, hopefully,
wow, seven.
Fingers crossed. But I think, I mean, there is undoubtedly life elsewhere in the universe. Whether or not it's advanced is another issue. But we are an oasis in a hostile universe. And if we... I mean, we're in the middle of the sixth mass extinction. And if we, I mean, we're not thinking about wiping just us out. We're talking about wiping out everything that exists on Earth. And it's, I mean, anthropocentrism being what it is, we share this planet with so many other forms of life. And because we want a tiny bit of convenience, we're gonna kill all these other things.
This is why I hate the personal choice argument. When you try to encourage people to be vegan or to be more environmentally friendly, they say, mind your own business, it's my personal choice. No, it is not.
Well, I have a quote, and well, yes, I am kind of a misanthrope, and I have my own issues with existence. But it was from the first season of True Detective, and Rustin Cole is talking to Woody Harrelson's character, and his argument is the best thing for mankind to do is to deny our programming, opt out, walk hand in hand into oblivion, brothers and sisters opting out of a raw deal.
Oh,
I believe
yeah,
he says
I said that last time.
It's the only honorable thing we can do, and we really have to consider, and seriously, we really need to consider that we are only one tenant on a giant biosphere. And if we wipe out all life on the planet for convenience, we are huge louche bags.
That is just absolutely shameful. I know.
I said louche, L-O-U-C-H-E.
I like that.
Well, yeah, because it doesn't have the misogyny of D-bag. So, and louche actually means a disreputable, contemptible person.
Okay, so when I go up to people wearing Canada Goose jackets, I can call them Canada louches instead of what I was saying, which I didn't feel very good about.
Yeah. You can do that.
That rhyme.
If they happen to be German, you can call them Deutsch bags. That's acceptable. do you have any questions for me?
Okay. I have a question.
Certainly.
Okay, we have like 2 minutes left. Speaking of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, now, is this my imagination, or did I read or hear recently that there is a way or going to be a way to dissolve that patch? Are you aware of that latest news?
There are bacteria that are, they've apparently engineered bacteria that can dissolve plastic. But
eat through it.
Here is an interesting thing. I saw this story originally in 2011. Apparently a gentleman or a company in Japan figured out how to take garbage bags and reverse engineer them back into oil. And you know what happened? The story disappeared, likely because the oil companies realized that that would affect their bottom line, because if they don't have to take it out, if they don't have to do expensive resource extraction, they can just dig out garbage dumps. That will make all the property they bought worthless. So I'm pretty sure the reason the story disappeared is because the oil companies paid them a whack load of money. I will give Jen a link to that story that you guys can put on your website, but that's kind of what oil companies do whenever someone comes up with a carburetor that doesn't need gas, or they just buy it out because they've invested so much money in oil fields that it would destroy their bottom line. I'd like to point out that money is imaginary and a social construct, and it does not exist.
I really want to know what people like this think when they put their heads on their pillows at night, or when they pick up their newborn grandchildren. Anyway, we have to wrap up. So thank you for listening to the Animal Voices show. We here at Animal Voices want to hear from you online. Find our website at animalvoices.org, on Facebook at Animal Voices Vancouver, Twitter at Animal Voices YVR, or email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Tune in next week for our International Women's Day show. Up next is Radio Eco Shock. And Scotty, you want to say something before we lead out with our song here?
Yeah, I'd just like to say, anyone who enjoys my absurd intellectual ramblings, feel free to follow me on the interwebs. Scottford von Castlehausen on Facebook and Von_Castlehausen on Instagram. I am delightful.
I do enjoy your posts, especially your photo collages that you come up with about once a week. So we are going to go out with a song today by one of my favorite bands, The Tragically Hip. This is Locked in the Trunk of a Car.
Of a life.